Vodka o'clock.
Hey everyone, it's Amber Love and you're listening to Vodka O'Clock from AmberUnmasked.com. Don't forget you can now sponsor the show and the website. Go to patreon.com/AmberUnmasked and you can pledge as little as a dollar per week. And today I am so delighted that I get to bring you another episode where we nerd completely out. It will be dorktastic, I hope. So welcome to the show, Comic News Insider host Jimmy Aquino.
Hello.
Hello, congratulations on your 600th episode.
Thank you. Yeah, also our 10-year anniversary is next week, so it's April 13, 2005 was the first show, and 600 just happened last week, and it was awesome, mega epic event, which was really fun, special guests, and lots of silly little songs, and fun stuff happened, so it was really cool.
Yeah, I saw lots of pictures from that. It looks good.
Yeah, we do record. We always do the anniversary episodes live at a bar, at a friend's bar, a restaurant. And it's really, really fun because then we get like a nice crowd of people. You know, it's great doing it at home, chilling with friends. But then when you're in front of a group, because, you know, the old recovering actor in me, I need your approval, you know. So it was actually got it in person, you know. So.
Yeah, the audience feels good.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah,
it's like, you know. They're there just to see you. Yeah. That must be what I imagine, like, Meltdown Comics must be like.
Yeah, and, like, when we first started back in the day, producer Joe, now producer Joe, we always produced it, but former co-host Joe, when we started, he had a much bigger place then, and we would invite people over on occasion to come over, you know, to hang out with us, to do this. We'd have, like, this little small little, you know, 5-10 people. And my idea originally was, like, let's do this every week with people, you know, and then he was like, oh no, that's too big of a thing. And, you know, he had, you know, other stuff going on and I did too, but I was like, oh, we can get an audience, man. But I understood, but yeah, other people took that and went with it. So that's fine.
So you've had this wonderful long journey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as you mentioned, Joe has changed his role from time to time. Mm-hmm. He, you know, awesome and like went to do good heroic work for a while.
Well, it still is. Yeah, he has an amazing charity he started years ago called The Project Solution, and people should definitely look it up. It's called, go to theprojectsolution.org, and they do very workable and doable projects around the world. You know, they raise money for 100% of the profits go to this project. Very first one years ago was building a well in Africa for $900. I'm like, that's a night at the strip club for me, so that's pretty great.
Yeah, that's really incredible.
Yeah.
Nice that he does so much amazing work.
Yeah.
So, and I know that occasionally, like, our dear friend Erica joins you on the show.
Yeah, the podcast wife, Erica, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like, her career has, like, taken off like a skyrocket, finally. It probably doesn't seem like that to her, I imagine.
No, I know, yeah. Nothing's overnight, kids. Nothing's overnight.
Yeah, really not. She's a newborn star after 10 years or something.
Yeah. Well, I always chalk it up to, very humbly, that once they start appearing on Comic News Insider, suddenly they get work. So, I don't know. You do the math. So,
Yeah. Let's talk about some of your incredible guests. I know it's probably impossible to pick just one best episode or moment.
Oh, my God.
But... Can you, in all of these years, think of something that happened that was, you know, the dream come true for you? I mean, besides great times with great friends,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is something you do all the time, you know, is there something there in 600 amazing episodes?
I mean, you know, we've had all sorts of, from people from comic book writers to artists to editors and to actors and producers and all that sort of stuff. And I've definitely had a few moments where I felt like, oh, this is amazing. I can't believe this is happening, you know, and or just some really cool moments. Like, I think one of the first ones was with Steve Rude. We had him on the phone, and we probably talked for almost 2 hours, me, him, and Joe, and he was just so excited to talk about his work and about art in the comics in general. And I'll admit, I hadn't read much of Nexus before we talked to him, but then, like, when I knew he was coming up, I boned up on him, borrowed my friend's collection, and read all of it, you know, and then read The Moth, and read all this other stuff. I'd read some of his other work, but he was just so lovely. Like, people say he has this reputation of being sort of a hard ass, and he was the nicest guy. And at one point, he's like, oh, you guys, I gotta run inside real quick with the kids and his wife, but I'm gonna call you right back. He called us right back, and we talked for another 40 minutes. And it was just really nice, you know, to sit there and sort of nerd out with this legend in the comics industry. So fun. And it's rare that doesn't happen, because most people are so sweet. On occasion, you get, like, you know, a jerk here and there. But usually if it's, someone in the Hollywood area. But not too much.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So would little, like, 13-year-old Jimmy expect that this is how your life would have turned out, or would he have expected something different?
No, 13-year-old Jimmy thought he was going to be a giant superstar actor and, by the time, in not make it past 30 and go out in a blaze of glory like James Dean. that's kind of true.
I saw some of those early shots, early black and white photos of your headshots and comp cards.
Oh yeah. I moved to New York in back in the day and to be an actor, and I gotta say I was pretty lucky. I worked a lot. I usually did three or four just in theater. I did three or four shows a year. And I had a great time doing it. And then I didn't really explore the TV and film side. I did some soap opera work on Guiding Light. And I wanted to make it sound like, a guest star. No, I did Under Five and extra work on there, which was, it was really fun. It paid really well. But besides that, I was like, I never explored that side. And all my casting agents kept saying, you've got a really good look for film and TV. I'm like, okay. And I just never bothered looking into it. So who knows? I could have been, could have been on anything, but I just didn't try. So, but I was lucky. I worked a lot in theater, so that was good. Mostly musicals, but it was fun stuff.
Well, that explains, that you still early on had an appreciation for fiction and storytelling. And, when did you start reading comics?
Really young. I guess the first thing was reading the Sunday comics, Sunday funnies, and that was something I really latched onto. And then I used to my mom would buy me all those little Charlie Brown books. But I'd always say, like, my first proper comic, I guess it would be, was a Richie Rich and Archie Digest. I can't remember which one it was. I feel like it was Archie, but it might have been Richie Rich. And it was just in some of the local Pick and Save down in Florida where I grew up. They had them there, and I was like, I want one of these. And that kind of got me going, of going to, like, the bookstore. But they didn't have a comic book store. They had a bookstore with comics in it. And I would go to the 10-cent bin. Mom's like, here's a dollar, and I just dig around, and most of the stuff I would get would be, like, a lot of stuff with the Richie Rich and Archie stuff, but then I really was, of course, a fan of Batman and from the DC cartoons, and so I was getting a lot of the Justice League stuff and the Batman and the Flash and Green Lantern. And yeah, started at a very early age.
So do you remember what your first actual comic shop experience was like?
Well, I guess it was, like I said, there was this shop in Jacksonville, Florida called Ye Old Bookshop, and it was a bookstore. And they had a huge section where they maybe had of comics, and it was all these long boxes full of, issues. But maybe, when I say huge, I would say maybe 20.
Because I've never seen it really combined like that, except for, like big chain store, like at Borders or Barnes & Noble or something, where they have, like, kind of like a graphic novel section. It's usually filled with a bunch of manga.
Yeah, well, I don't want to reveal my age, but this is, I'm old, so it was back in the 80s, yeah.
I've just never seen one that's like a store.
Yeah, it was an old book, it was an old used bookshop, and they had one section that had new stuff, but it was mostly all old used books. And this little section of, like, 20, maybe, something long boxes. And they had the dime bin, the quarter bin, and then they had this other stuff. And I do distinctly remember, we'd go in all the time, or when we were in that area of town, And again, my mom would be like, here's a dollar, you can get in, you know, and I would always go straight to the dime bin to, you know, more for my money and get what I could. And then as I got older, you know, a proper comic book shop started opening up there, and I'd sort of fallen on the wayside when I got in my teens. I still kind of picked them up here and there, but between my, you know, teens and, you know, I didn't collect regularly. You know, I think it was probably around, I gotta say, I fell for it. We all did. The Death of Superman.
Sure.
That I got back into stuff. I'm like, or, you know, that's not fair. And it's probably maybe the first Batman movie. I kind of got back into it and really started seriously collecting, you know, when the Death of Superman happened. So, yeah, it was a lot.
So you were pretty young, though, when you took off and moved to the Big Apple.
Yeah,
so...
I was five. No, I'm just kidding. yeah, I was in my early, very early 20s.
And that sounds, like, to me, it just sounds like, I mean, I don't even want to do that now, and all the jobs there. So I completely just don't understand that adventurous side of people that want to take off and go to New York. But I've visited a couple of the comic shops there, so... What do you normally do for your comics now?
Now, well, like, Midtown Comics was always my local. Like, when I first moved here, there was this small little store. We, you know, my friend Matt and I, he had also moved up here from Florida. And we would find these comic shops around the city, just exploring. And there was this one right in the heart of Times Square called New York Comics. It was a small little place, and that was sort of my first spot I'd go to all the time. And they didn't last very long because I'm sure that rent was ridiculous because they were right there in the heart of Times Square. And then I'd find these little shops here and there all over. And then when Midtown opened, I was like, oh, this is it. This is my home. And the one in Midtown, the original. Mm-hmm. And I went there forever until digital happened to me only a couple years ago. If that, a year and a half ago, maybe. And I was always saying I can't imagine going completely digital, and I'm not completely, but single issue wise, like floppies, I'm 99% digital.
Yeah, me too.
So it's just so much easier. I still get, you know, graphic novels and the occasional trade. And if I'm at a convention, I'll pick up someone's floppy if it's like some small press, something, you know, just to support and check it out, you know, but, yeah, I'm mostly digital now. It's Comixology.
Yeah, I pretty much the only hard copy things that I get are going to be either like Kickstarter rewards that have to be hard copies, or like you said, going to the convention because I like to meet the people making the book in the first place and get to know them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I enjoy picking up the books right from there because they have table fees usually that are costing them a fortune that if they don't sell it, they're going to be pretty screwed.
Yeah.
So I like to do that kind of shopping at the conventions, and otherwise it's like, yeah, I mean, I used to get all my graphic novels at like big sales and stuff because I just didn't like paying full price for.
Yeah, I'm trying to cut back. When I moved a year and a half ago, I sold my floppy collection, which was about 50 long boxes and about 20 to 30 short boxes. So somewhere around, I'd say, over 10,000 plus comics. I sold them to Shelton down at Heroes Con.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It was great.
The main reasons that I went to digital, too, but I donated my books. I just got rid of them. I have some. I mean, I kept some. But, yeah, I just didn't feel like, you know, trying to fit them into yet another space.
Yeah, well, I had, like, over 10,000. I'm like, I should make a little money off of this. I've invested a lot, you know, and
insane. Like that is like a ton. Yeah. I mean, I you know, there's always like stories about who has the most, who has the biggest collection, or something that was in the news a couple months ago. And but did you know exactly what you had?
I knew a bunch of it, but I was even going through it. So I remember when I was going through it before he was coming up. And I was like, oh, these are great runs I had I found, like, the original Wolverine miniseries. I found, you know, I didn't have anything like that was, like, individual comics I had in there. I had maybe some that were on the market you could get for $20 or $30 on eBay, like the first appearance of Gambit or something like that. But I'm like, that's not that rare. So anything I felt might have been rare when I pulled out, but it wasn't much. So, yeah, I got rid of all those, and then I kept about a bookshelf full, bookshelf and a half full of graphic novels and trades. And even those I'm starting to pare down. Like, I have out there right now in my living room, I've got one bookshelf full of graphic novels and trades. The second one, I think it's only one. And then I have maybe what would fit on a couple shelves I took out and put in my room because I want to either sell those or, and I started giving a lot away, though, actually. But just either sell them or give them away. So I really am trying to pare down and get rid of a lot of stuff just because I'm like, well, I really love these stories, really like them, but it's rare that I pick it up again and read them. So
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
So in a couple weeks, we're having Free Comic Book Day, and that's on a Saturday. Did you get to actually take part in that because you work on weekends?
No, I never go. I went one time because also to me, and I have sort of a little rant I read every year about it, to me, Free Comic Book Day should be for bringing in new people. So that, to me, that was the original idea, was to bring new people in. But now even the companies, and it really annoys me, they're starting to do exclusive on Free Comic Book Day. So that means that people already reading need to go in and buy, or not buy, but get these comics because they're part of some major storyline. I'm like, that's not the idea of Free Comic Book Day to me, and I don't think that's the original idea that it was. So I still love the idea of it, but the fact that a lot of the companies are requiring you to pick these things up, and then like within a day you see people selling all of them they've collected at all their various bookshops around on eBay, it's just really not cool. So I like the fact that it happens, and I think it still does bring in new readers. I hope so, but I would like to see it focus more on that.
Yeah, we usually try to get new readers. But it seems to be that it's usually the regular crowd comes in as sort of a way for them to celebrate. And, we get a couple of cosplayers. Like, Free Comic Book Day isn't, like, our big, huge thing. Our big thing for Comic Fusion is in October. But it's still a lot of fun. And we usually have, like, you know, a few creators in. And they also do, for Halloween, they give out small little comics that are very similar to the Free Comic Book Day comics. But they're, like, minis.
Mm-hmm.
They're, like, those
little ash cans.
Half size thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so like Halloween is kind of like its own celebration too. Which, you know, a lot of parents like stuff instead of candy for their kids. Same thing with Easter, you know, like kids like to, the parents come in and they buy like all the little gaming things, the Hero Clicks and the magic cards and stuff like that because it's not candy. So.
Yeah. And I've got no issue with that at all, of course. I just want like, you know, the more people reading comics, the better, I think. So, and I realize it's probably tough to get non-readers in, but that's what I think maybe the retailers need to push more, or it's really more about the regulars bringing somebody new in, I think. Like, bring a friend, you don't read comics, hey, this is a cool thing, come check it out, you don't got to spend anything, I mean, it'd be nice, maybe pick up something, but you get a free comic, check it out. So, I like to see it more on that vibe, but, it's still a great thing, you know. But I don't ever get to go, and I don't go because I am working, so.
Well, you mentioned, you know, bringing in, and how do you think that the industry is handling that these days? I mean, it's obviously since we were kids, so how do you think bringing in new readers, what kind of plan should they be
to do? Much smarter people probably have better ideas, but I don't know because I feel it's so incestuous right now where it's like it really only appeals to the hardcore readers a lot, especially with Marvel and DC, because if you were some random person that saw, and that's something that does bring in, people say it or not, but the movies do bring people in, and the TV shows will bring people in. And let's say they've never read comics, but they love the Batman movies, or they love the Avengers, and they go in, and they pick one up, they're like, what is happening? Who is this? Who are these people? I don't know any of this, you know? So at least Marvel, I think, kind of addressed that recently where they're trying to do like a book that was the movie Avengers. I'm like, okay, that's fair. You know, bringing in people that won't be as convoluted of a story. But it's tough to go and pick up a DC or Marvel book if you don't know what's going on. Unless it's a brand new number one. Even then, it's like the character might have some convoluted back history, you know, that you don't know of. So I think they're probably working on it, and they're thinking of new ideas every day. Again, probably have teams of much smarter people than I figuring this stuff out. But and I don't know what the solution could be besides the steps they're taking. It's like, hey, well, let's make special books for the non-readers. And if that upsets the regular readers, too bad. We're trying to bring in new people, so.
Which book really stuck with you throughout your life? Did you have, like, something that...
There's no seminal work. Like, I didn't read any of the big stuff. I do remember going to that bookshop as a kid. I remember in the sale bin was this whole 12-issue series called Watchmen. And I asked the guy, I'm like, what's this Watchmen thing? He goes, oh, it's something, it's none of the characters. It's pretty cool, but it's none of the characters you know. I'm like, oh, well, then I don't want it. So I didn't buy it. So I could have had the 12 issues, you know, for like
probably young.
For like $5, you know. And I was like, oh, no, this was probably when I was a late teen, but still.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like, I mean, I definitely read a lot of DC more as a kid. And Crisis on Infinite Earths was one of my favorite things. And I definitely, like, some of that stuck with me, especially when, like, characters died. I was like, what? You know, and, like, when Super, like, that issue of Superman holding Supergirl and him bawling his eyes out. I'm not going to lie, I kind of teared up reading that story, you know, and it was just like, wow. I thought the writing was really great in it, and some of the stuff I remember from that, like, the funeral scene for her. You know, it was just like, wow, really touching. So, I don't know, I guess that sort of stuck with me.
And what kind of stuff are you reading these days? Are you sticking with the mainstream books, or are you doing any...
I read everything. I read so much, because that's something I got to say the podcast introduced me to, and I may not have ever been introduced to, was, I knew there were other comics out there. Like, I knew about Dark Horse, I knew about Image, obviously, because when the Image explosion happened back in the day, and all these other companies, but I was like, oh, I didn't know about Top Shelf, or, you know, now a big place like First Second, and all these other little people just making their own comics. I'm like, what? So when I was introduced to that by going to conventions, it opened up a whole new world to me, and that's mostly what I read. I still read some mainstream DC and Marvel. But there's so much out there, it's tough to keep up. So I could love something, because we review new books every week, so I could love the very first issue, but then not notice when it comes out again, till suddenly 5 issues down, I'm like, oh, I really like that first book, maybe I should catch up on it.
I do the same thing, but in much smaller volume.
Yeah, no, I mean, I still do a pretty small volume, and I'm lucky enough, and I don't want to say it's to be like, most of the companies, except for DC and Marvel, obviously because they're too big, will send me, I'm on the review list, and you're probably as well, maybe on the press review list, and that's really nice. And so I do often review a ton of Image and IDW and Dark Horse and Boom and those related companies, even Titan Comics over in the UK have some fantastic stuff coming out, Valiant, all these other ones. So I read a lot more of those probably than I do, but I got to say consistently, it's tough. Like Walking Dead is still a perennial favorite. It's everybody's perennial favorite. But then mainstream-wise, it changes all the time. I'm back on the Batman books. I was off for a while. I'm back on X-Men books because I really like what Bendis is doing with them. Thor is one of my favorite series. Love it. Old and new. I think it's great what Jason Aaron's been doing. All the great Star Wars books are coming out, are really nice. Quite enjoy those. They're all really good. DC-wise, Harley Quinn's one of my favorite titles. I read so much, and I read a lot. I just read this great graphic novel last night from one of my favorite UK publishers, Self-Made Hero. And I read a lot of their stuff. And I read this one called Vincent by Barbara Stock, who's going to be at MoCA this weekend, and I'm probably going to interview her, and she's a Dutch cartoonist. And it's a graphic novel about Vincent van Gogh, who was a Dutch cartoonist, you know. So it's pretty awesome. I love reading autobiography stuff, you know, stuff like Fun Home and, you know, just, God, Julia Wirtz is one of my favorite cartoonists. The stuff she writes about her own life is fantastic, you know. So I love everything. It's like I go out of my way to try to read as many different things as possible.
I haven't read Fun Home, but I read the book that came after that.
Oh, about her mom? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not as good. Quite good, because Alison Bechdel is just a genius, but Fun Home's brilliant.
Yeah. I definitely love her style, mm-hmm. but Fun Home, you know, I know this, what it's about, yeah. anyway, and it just opened on Broadway.
Yeah.
Like, can you believe that is a Broadway musical?
I know.
In the last?
I can't believe I haven't seen it yet, because it opened off Broadway first, and I kept meaning to go, but now that it's on Broadway, I'm like, okay, I got to go see this. So, because they got great buzz, which is why it moved to Broadway. So, yeah, I'd love to see that. And you know me, turn anything to a musical, I'll take it. So.
I know. That's why I thought for sure that that you'd have some strong opinions about things like Spider-Man on Broadway.
Doesn't bother me at all. I'm like, I didn't see it. I got to say, I've got, you know, I used to go see stuff all the times when I was an actor. On my days off, I would go to TKTS, which is that discount ticket place in Midtown, and see a Broadway show for $40, half price. You know, or I'd stand in line for rush seats or get a... I saw Phantom of the Opera standing for standing. They used to... I don't know if they still do it, but they had, like, standing areas for $15, you know? And it was, like, great. Now I don't go see anything, and it's a shame because there's so many good things I want to go see. But often on my day off, I'm like, oh, I just want to chill with a friend. Or if I'm seeing somebody, I just want to chill with my girl, you know, whatever. And it's just like... I don't even think about going to theater. It's a shame because I was in the business for so long. It just sort of like fell on the wayside. So I'm going to try to rectify that and start going to see stuff more. But
I don't think I've been in like 10, 11 years.
Wow.
Like,
yeah.
It's been a long time.
I haven't been to a Broadway show in a good year or two, which is a terrible shame because it's right there, you know? And
it's right there. It's also right there. Expensive.
Yeah. So close, and I just like, you know, and I have friends in shows who offer, you know, I can get you house seats or on occasion get a free ticket, and a lot of times I just like, oh, well, I just want to stay home and watch TV, or, you know, I've got a dinner planned with a friend, you know, but yeah, I need to start taking more advantage of like, seeing stuff around. Like, we got offered free tickets at work for a show. And one night I could have went, but it was like the day after 600. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be kind of recovering from that. I don't know if I'm going to go. And so I never RSVP'd. I'm like, I should have went and saw that show. Why didn't I go see that show? But I will start endeavoring maybe to see more of that. So.
Well, there you go. You have a new goal.
Yeah.
Do you set goals? Like, do you always think about the future? Do you? Are you like, screw it, living... dealing with today and...
Like, if I wake up, I'm happy. I'm like, oh, I made it to another day. Awesome. No. I definitely, you know, we'll have our little pipe dreams. Like, I've been wanting to live in England for years, you know, and I'm started to make steps towards seeing if that could be a possible reality in the next couple of years. You know, that's the only sort of big goal I've had recently. I was like, I'd like to live over there and check it out maybe for a year or so. So, you know, I've been sort of putting feelings out, looking into that, and but besides anything else, you know, I don't act anymore. I've kind of started missing it a little, and I've thought about getting back into it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big plan ahead type person. So,
well, because I was wondering if you're ever going to actually like write down your cool story, your cool autobiography part.
Oh,
about,
yeah.
You know, that you wrote about on Facebook quite a while ago. If you were ever going to turn that into some kind of script or...
There were definitely plans years ago. It's about my sister and I. I'm not going to tell the whole story here. It's just, you know, I grew up with an older brother, and my mom and dad got divorced when I was young. And then in 96, I found out I had a sister. In the year 2000, I found her, and we're really close now. She lives in Jersey, and... we're the best of friends, and she's amazing. And I can't imagine not having her in my life. And it's a really amazing story how I found her, and we had met when we were younger. We didn't know we were related. And we had talked about it years ago about doing like a graphic novel of some sort. I had quite a few artists interested. And even the friends were like, I'll do the cover. I'm like, sweet, you know? And, but then it sort of fell on the wayside. And then I even thought about, because when I would tell the story, I would sort of act out like my dad, my aunt, and my whoever else. And my friend's like, why don't you do like a one-man show? And I was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. Very, you know, John Leguizamo, you know, something like that, you know? And I was like, that'd be interesting. But I don't know. It's like, it's definitely, I think it's a pretty great story. And anyone I've told it to, like, this would be a really good movie. And that's always sort of on the back burner. I need to revisit that and rewrite it and do these things. And I think maybe one day I will. But again, I'm not sure what medium I would take it into. I feel like going the comic book route would be good first, just to have it like something to show people, like if they wanted to turn it into something else. Hey, look at this, you know, and instead of just pitching them, you know, but we'll see. Who knows?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I do think it's a touching story, and it's a feel-good story.
Happy ending and everything, you know? It's like, come on.
I mean, and your sister is very cool and alive and well, and you know, has a couple of cool kids.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like, I can even add an addendum to the story now, you know? And it's so great. So it's something I do need to revisit and rewrite and figure out if there's a, you know, a medium to attach it to, or mediums, you know, so.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, then, as far as, like, other comics go, you know, you mentioned the new Thor, as well as the old Thor, and Bat books and stuff like that. So, is there a character that you are frustrated with, or that one that's like maybe fallen to the wayside that you want to see brought back? Because it seems like both of the main universes are being rebooted or relaunched or whatever, reimagined.
I mean, there's a few. I'm not necessarily frustrated, but I'd like to see brought back. Like, in Marvel, I was obviously always a fan, obviously because I'm part Asian, of Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu. But it was completely a Bruce Lee ripoff. Everyone knows that. But I really thought this miniseries they did a few years ago was really cinematic and really cool. And they've really done nothing with the character, because I guess it's tough to figure out. I see something happen with him. There was this great, I love this TC character. And over the years, they on occasion bring him back. And there was a couple miniseries they did over the years. Ragman. I thought that was such a cool character.
Yeah, and say that one, like, besides all the patchwork, cloak, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty bad, and, like, in each of the patches were, like, a soul of some sort or something like that, and I thought it was such a cool character, and a couple of different minis really captured my imagination when I read them back in the day. I read an article recently, I forgot who wrote it, it might have been Heidi or somebody on Heidi's site that wrote it on the beat about how Marvel's pushing the X-Men aside because of the movie stuff, because Fox owns the rights to most of them, and in the word mutant they can't even use, which is why Inhumans is becoming a big deal now. And I'm just like, that's such a shame. Like, I'm still reading the X-Men books now, some of them, and I'm quite enjoying them. I do feel like they don't have that feel like they had in the 90s, I got into X-Men late. I got into X-Men like early 90s and devoured them, and like would get all these old back issues. And the 90s and 2000s were, you know, in the 80s were the heyday, you know. And it's just a shame. Like, this, it's arguably the X-Men, you know, kept Marvel in business for years. You know, it was always the top-selling comic. And now in the article was talking about how they've really pushed down the importance of the X-Men in everything. Like, even on the website, in the comics, in the movies, and because they don't want anything to do with it, because Fox, you know, doesn't want to share them, you know. And it's just like, I understand the business side of things, but I think it's such a shame, because they're such a big part of their universe, you know?
Especially because I really don't know too much about the Inhumans at all, but when it comes to the X-Men, they really were about a cast being diverse, which is important to people certainly now. We talk about it more, but I mean, you know, like back when they started in the 60s and 70s, it was, you know, they were the cutting edge.
Yeah.
They were talking about things and stories that, you know, nobody dared talk about unless you saw like basically like if you saw like the gritty old crime shows like White Shadow or something, you know, they took it and they superheroed it.
Yeah.
Those kind of stories about, you know, what people were going through and how they felt different. And, you know, I hope the Storm book is doing well. I have no idea what the sales on that book are.
Yeah, I don't know. I read the first issue, quite liked it, but again, fell behind. I'm like, oh, I should pick that back up because I love Greg's work, Greg Pak, who's writing it.
Yeah, I haven't read any of it. And, you know, again, it's a shame, but you can only, like you said, there's a certain amount of support that you can throw around.
Yeah. But we'll see what happens. I mean, I think they even said, like, in one of the new video games, none of the X-Men appear. I'm like, that's weird.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like one of the smaller video games. I'm like, all right. Okay, but, yeah, it's a shame because I feel like it's such a big part of their world. And now that Disney and Marvel and ABC are all one, the powers that be at Disney are, you know, are probably have a lot to do with, you know, with the business decisions now, too, so.
Sucks, because I loved X-Men Evolution, and I would love to see more of that on TV. You know, like, either as the cool animated show that it was, it was pretty spectacular animated.
Yeah.
It was, you know, see something like that in some kind of live action, like they're doing with, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, there's been a couple different mutant-type shows on, but I don't know. There's something about them. I never got into them.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, to be fair, you know, the characters that Marvel didn't own, Spider-Man and X-Men, were the ones that really shot the Marvel movie business into power. And then when they started making their own movies, you know, like, you know, when they came out, Iron Man did so well, they suddenly got something. Because, God, Spider-Man was in litigation for years. And then they finally put it out. It was such a big success. You know, people were like, oh, look at this. We could do this. And then when the first X-Men movie came out, they were like, whoa, that's amazing. And I still love those movies, but...
Oh, yeah, they're fun.
Yeah. Third one, not so much. Third X-Men, not so much. But that's all right. But
it had its moments.
Yeah,
That it really liked. I actually really liked the Sandman part.
Yeah.
But I'm probably the only one.
We all have our guilty pleasures. It's fine.
Yeah. I wasn't so much into the symbiote part, but I liked the Sandman stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, we talked about local shops and everything, and you mentioned doing, you know, popping into Mocha. What other conventions are you getting to this?
Well, I have to say, I've been sort of going to the same conventions the past few years, and I kept saying, okay, I need to go to different ones, but these are just so great. I love, like, the local show Mocha, the Museum of Comic and Cartoon Artists, this weekend, and it's great because it's just small press, you know, creator owned, and you'll get a few people there that are crossovers, like Dean Haspil will be there, you know, and Noel Stevenson, who's starting to get a lot of amazing work, mainstream work, as she should, because she's amazingly talented. But then you get all these great European cartoonists over there, and I love discovering those. Obviously they're already big in Europe, you know, but, or maybe they're not, but I love checking those out and seeing that. That's a great show. And what's become another favorite show is TCAF, which is next month. Yeah. It's in May in Toronto, although I'm not sure if I'm going this year, but I usually am heavily involved in that show where I'll, you know, host some panels. I do tons of interviews there. And that, again, is a very small press show. It's very like Mocha, but it attracts a huge crowd from around the world. Like, there's always a big British presence there. And a lot of the great Canadian cartoonists are always there. It's just a really fun show. And I usually get a ton of interviews there. And I also, you know, that's become a favorite show as well. Heroes Con probably is a favorite show every year down in Charlotte, North Carolina. That one I'm heavily involved in as well, where I host panels and I have a table and I do interviews all throughout the weekend. And that is probably one of the most well-respected shows on both sides of the table, both mainstream and indie, because they've always focused on having this indie island, you know, area and this whole, you know, like Marvel and DC aren't there with tables or booths, but their presence is heavily felt because you get huge names from both companies, you know, tabling there. So it's a really great mix of mainstream and indie. Yeah, I mean, of course, San Diego is insane, and New York Comic Con is becoming the same way, and I like the new special edition, you know, the one New York Comic has added, and yeah, there's so many shows.
There is, it's ridiculous. I've seen, like, more shows in New Jersey pop up for this year than, like, in the last 10 years combined.
Yeah.
Like, they came out of nowhere, and I don't really think that little New Jersey can support it, to be honest. But it's absolutely absurdly crazy how many shows are here now, because they're all going to be small shows.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to get New York numbers here. It's not going to happen.
No. And I remember...
I mean, people don't even come here.
Hey, I quite enjoy the Garden State. I have nothing against Jersey. My sister lives there, for goodness sake. I've lived there for, you know, a while myself. So, I mean, not just here, but in the UK, new shows are popping up left and right, and... if people have figured out by now, I'm a big Anglophile. And there used to be only, like, the main show there used to be Bristol Comic Expo, and I first went in 2008 to that, and that was the big show. And that's sort of fallen on the wayside. I don't even know if it's happening this year. And now there's all these big shows. There's Thought Bubble, which is becoming one of the most respected and biggest shows there, is in the fall, and Leeds, and all the MCM shows, and the London Supercon, and... now they're having all these, the Lakes Festival and all these different ones all over England are popping up. Leicester and Cardiff has one coming up now, too, and they have friends involved in that. And it's really great to see. I mean, guys, it's happening worldwide. All these little, you know, comic shows popping up out of nowhere.
Yeah, my friends in Australia always say that they need more because they're still pretty lacking. Like, they have two, like, massively huge shows.
Yeah, Supernova and the other one, yeah. And,
Well,
I remember back in the day when I first moved to New York in the, you know, like 94, I would just seek out comic shows. And I think at the time Wizard would always list them, you know, Wizard Magazine would say, oh, this is a show in New York. And so my friend and I, and they'd be in these little hotel, you know, ballrooms, taking up one room and maybe 50 tables. And I'll just go there sort of like looking for old issues and see the occasional person. I remember seeing somebody dressed up as Vampirella, and I was like, oh, this is amazing, you know. And and just buying little things there, and, you know, and you might. And then I wasn't really into who wrote or who drew them. I didn't know who these people were. And so I'm sure they're probably very well known who are probably friends of mine now who are sitting at those tables. And I just didn't know who they were. But I remember those were very charming. And kind of fun to go to, because, like, oh, these little shows going around, I'm, you know, might pick up a back issue of X-Men here or whatever, and then sort of dive in, or bin dive, you know, and...
actual time to talk to people.
Yeah.
The smaller way.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Is there any that you haven't been to that you, like, that you know you really want to get to? Like, I've never been to Emerald City, I've never been to here.
Yeah. Emerald City, I've been, because I know Jim, the guy that runs it, and for years we've talked about it. Even early last year at New York Comic Con, he's like, you're coming next year. I'm like, I want to come so bad. But it's so tough doing two West Coast trips in a year because, A, the expense, and, B, getting away, you know. And it's kind of tough because I always make my West Coast trip to San Diego. Like, I hit L.A. after to see my friends and do some set visits and things like that. So, obviously, I already missed it. I would love to go to Emerald City out of the... American cons, that's probably the main one I haven't hit. You know, C2E2 I wouldn't mind checking out, although I'm sure it's very close to being just like New York City Comic Con, since it's, you know, the same people that run it.
Yeah,
I can't imagine it's different. Yeah, that's like Chicago to see friends and see my old roommate Ben and see other people, you know. But but in England, I really want to go to Thought Bubble in Leeds, because I know Lisa and him be able to run that, and all my friends go to that. I'm just like, oh, that's the show to go to. And so those are probably the main ones. I even MegaCon in Orlando, because it's just sort of close to home, where a lot of my friends are from Jacksonville, and sometimes they drive down, like, oh, you can ride back with us, and, you know, and visit, you know, your mom and friends. And I'm like, yeah, that's an idea. But, yeah, so there's definitely a few I'd like to hit. And now the more I think about it, I'm like, oh, the Kansas City one, or this, you know, just to see. And but it's more so not just to check out the show, but it's to see friends. And that's what's great about conventions, is because being in this sort of game for 10 years, podcasting, you know, it's like I had friends in the business before I started podcasting, which it helped that other people like John and Paul were friends of mine, because they would sort of introduce me to a lot of people. But now I've become friends with so many cartoonists. It's like, it's such a fun thing. I'm going to do interviews. I'm hanging out, but I get to hang out with my friends. So some I see only at conventions. So that's always a plus. It's like, it's, you know, it's always just like, I'm just going to go hang out with my friends for the weekend. Yeah, and that's great. Yeah.
I can't imagine the shows in London. That must be great.
Yeah.
Thought Bubble does seem really nice, because like you said, it's a very, like indie type of atmosphere.
Very curated,
I guess.
Show too. It's really great.
It just seems amazing. And Angoulême, I would go to.
Oh God! Of course, Angoulême. Yes, I'd love to go to.
If I was with somebody who knew what they were doing,
yeah.
Like
a French person, I would love to be like. My French is minimal. Like I can, you know.
Like Redeemer, he can probably speak the language. So.
Yeah, I've got quite a few cartoonist friends that go, and some of my European cartoonist friends and British ones go all the time. And I'm just like, and plus being a big wine person, I'm like, oh, I want to go visit, you know, wine country after that and whatever. But
I would be so screwed, because I gave up cheese and I don't drink. So it's like, could you imagine going to France and not eating delicious cheese?
Oh, no, not at all. No, I don't. I've got to say, if there's anything that would kill me, if I was told to give up, it would be cheese. I'm like, I can't give up.
I went back to France, because I only went like one day, but it's like, if I went back now, it would just be like bread. Like I would eat nothing but bread.
Oh God. I would be cheesing and whining it up all over the country.
Crepes. Hook me up with crepes.
Crepe?
That, I mean,
yes.
I have to hook up crepes. I got to say, there are certain things that are in my life to stay forever.
Well, that's cheese and wine for me. So yeah, for sure. Cheese, wine, bourbon, strippers. There we go. That's all I need.
So if you know of a stripper and she speaks French.
Yes. I probably do.
Yeah, the last one that I met, God, where the hell were we? Boston? Mm-hmm. I'm like drawing a blank. I can't even remember what that's
a good show too, by the way. Yeah, Boston's becoming a good show.
I can't remember even what city we were in. I don't know, but it was this really beautiful strip club. And yeah, the girl was like she had this gorgeous dark hair, and she was from Russia or something. And she had this amazing accent. I'm like, I could just like listen to you talk. Like, and you're smoking hot, and you have a voice. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got some friends in that business, and I might have dated one or two back in the day, so... Nothing wrong with it. I got no issue with it. I think it's, hey.
No.
I make that coin awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was hilarious, because she was telling me that, I don't know if she was hired or how it happened, but she ended up attending San Diego Comic-Con, like not even ever expecting to be there, and going dressed as like Silk Spectre.
Yeah, nice.
Oh, do you know Silk Spectre? I'm just like, what? Yeah. I'm like, so this is the kind of chat that you have with the stripper that I, you know, the clubs I go to.
Well, it was like at Heroes Con, the first year I went, there is a club that gentlemen frequent right down the road from the main hotel. And so a bunch of us went, and we met some of the girls were huge comic nerds. And the next day we saw them at the show. And every year, like there was one I used to see every year when I go down there. I haven't been down to the club in ages. But she'd always come to the show. I'm like, oh, hey, how you been? You know, still at the club? They're like, yeah. So some of them are nerds, too.
They are. I don't have money to go, but I was taken because it was my birthday.
There you go. Just come with me.
Special. Like, what are you buying me? Sure.
I might not make it rain, but I can make it sprinkle. So it's all right.
Nice. You're well connected.
I know a couple people. But yeah, Boston is actually, that's another one you brought that up. Boston's becoming a pretty good show, too. I've gone a couple times. I've enjoyed it. Some Baltimore, yeah. Too. I've been to Baltimore in years. You've probably been to Baltimore when I have. But I love the Baltimore show, too. And yep. I need to get yep. back to that one.
I do love that show. They've kind of outgrown their space a bit. Same thing with Boston. Boston's changed spaces a few times.
Yeah.
And that's, it's good, but it's hard to manage when you're going through there and there's, you can't even move.
Yeah, that's what happened with HeroesCon. HeroesCon doubled in size 2 years ago. They, because it used to take up a very small area of the convention center. And then 2 years ago, they decided to double it. And it was really weird. It just felt really weird. Now, last year, I was used to it. But the first year, it was really strange because it was such an intimate show. You could lap it in, you know, half an hour. And it was really great. And it's still, like I said, a great show, but it has gotten bigger because it is a very successful show. So that's good to see. I'm glad to see them grow. But sometimes I miss the intimacy of those smaller shows.
Yeah, that was why I had really liked Baltimore so much, was because it was a medium size. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't basically like a flea market. It was a nice, well put together show with really good, you know, panels and artists that would attend. And now it's just very claustrophobic.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I get it. It's great. I'm glad to see all these people coming. You know, it's just like sometimes trying to get through, like even New York Comic Con, God, even getting through the Artist Alley last year times was like, oh my God, it's like the main floor almost. It's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to stay in Artist Alley there now.
Yeah. Yeah, the main floor I definitely still hit just because I, you know, want to check everything out. But
yeah, because some people are definitely going to be small press, like Action Lab.
Yeah.
Can't really fit in Artist Alley.
Right.
So.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and they're great guys, and I love to see their stuff.
Yeah, me too. They're really putting out some really good stuff, too. I'm glad to see, like, these smaller companies are putting out, like, Action Lab, Black Mass Studios are all, you know, coming up out of here and putting out some good stuff recently, so nice to see.
Yeah, and, you know, so a convention that's more the size of Baltimore, they probably have more time to talk to you.
Yeah.
Than in New York. I mean, at least in New York, like when I was there and I finally, it took me forever to find where Action Lab was because they were.
Oh yeah. Last year they were way, I was like, what? I kind of stumbled on them. Like, oh, hey guys, you know,
I was in a really strange location last year, but, so I got to see Eric Grissom and Jamal and I wanted to meet, I saw that, noticed that Marcus Williams is there from HeroCats, and he was talking to a woman, so I didn't want to interrupt him because they were having a good time. Mm-hmm. He was just sketching his cats on the covers and talking to her for like a good 20, 25 minutes. And he finally saw me and he was like, did you need something? And so I was like, I will wait. I just want to meet you. And I ended up, you know, podcasting with him a couple months ago.
That.
You know, I love the book so much that I didn't care how long I stood there.
Oh, that's my annoying superpower, is that walking up to a table to say hi to a friend, literally just say hi, and some fan, or not even a fan, someone just random person walking by, just starts talking to them. And of course, they don't want to be rude and say, excuse me, you know, like, and about nothing. Or even like some person they're trying to sell to. And they'll spend 10 minutes talking to the person walks away with nothing. And that drives me crazy. I'm like, I just want to say hi, stop talking to them about nothing. But that's what they're there for, so.
Yeah, you get that at panels, too. Like, obviously, I get that people are nervous. Mm-hmm. Some of them are so incredibly nervous that you can tell that their thoughts are sort of like exploding in their head as they're trying to ask their questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the end of the panels, there's usually, not always, but they try to leave 5 minutes for Q&A.
Right.
And there'll be somebody who takes a whole minute just to try and figure out words.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know what your question was.
Yeah, no idea. Yeah, that's funny. Like, when I had the table in New York Comic Con, used to do for the podcast arena, you know, we have people sit down and do signings. And a lot of the fans would come. Other times people would just approach the table and not knowing who any of us were and just start talking to us about nothing. We're like, okay, well, and I could be sort of not rude, but I could sort of be the one to dismiss them. Because, like, well, there's a line forming. They want to meet this person. They actually know who they are, you know, or something like that. I'm like, okay, did you want anything else you needed? Great, we're going to ask you to move along if you can't make some people that want to meet this person. Oh, well, who is it? I'm like, just come back later. See you later. Like, and that's fine. You know, they're just kind of socially awkward. They're not sure what to do. And I'm like, that's okay. It's just, they don't know when to say goodbye. You know, the whole thing when they kind of hang out. So I've gotten really good at the what I call the royal shake-away, which apparently the queen does this in England. Like, when she meets you, she shakes your hand but shakes you away. And it's pretty amazing. So you're kind of like, oh, I guess I should be going now. Great.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's great to meet you. Now keep moving. All right.
So there's no more Podcast Arena.
No, they discontinued it last year. And to be fair, a little relieved because Comic News Insider was the point person for it. So we sort of, I guess, ran it in a sense because we were the point people with New York Comic Con to organize it and gather all the other podcasters. And it was a lot of work. And I don't think many people appreciated it or understood it. A lot of work I went into to organize it every year. Joe was doing it full-time, or the both of us were doing it. You know, it was tough, not just organizing the other podcasters, because you get people that will drop in or drop out or get upset they didn't get a spot, or, you know, and then when they did get a spot, they did nothing with it, you know, and you know, they gave us a really great deal on these tables. Like, they were, you know, like, most of those tables are usually four times as much, you know, and I'm like, use this table to your advantage, you know, and like, bring stuff to you, get, have people do signings, and most people did, and it was great. But besides the other podcasters, our table, we always had massive amounts of signings from, you know, cartoonists to sometimes an actor, you know, and we do a raffle every year, and giveaways, all this other stuff, and it was really fun. It was nice to have a home base. But last year when I was like, oh, well, I don't have to organize all that this year, it was sort of a, all right, not too bad. So I don't mind that we don't have it. I thought it was a shame to lose it. But every year, the past few years, they kept putting us in, like, worse and worse spots. And
yeah,
when the year before we were in Artist Alley, which I felt terrible about, because especially when we're doing our raffle, luckily I was sitting next to, like, a friend, Will Sliney, but I'm sure some of the other artists that didn't know, we were kind of like, I wish I would shut up about that raffle thing, you know, because that would last 15 minutes, you know, twice a day, and we'd be yelling out, hey, the hell wants this, and number, here's your number, and so that part was like, I was like, okay, we shouldn't be in Artist Alley, we should have been on the main floor somewhere, but I get it, they want to sell the table, so they make more money selling the table, so it makes sense,
right.
Makes sense.
Well, maybe we can get, you know, more like a podcast panel, you know,
yeah.
But if people have questions to podcasters, that could be done.
I do enjoy, like, every year San Diego, they have one, and last year was the first time I wasn't on it, and I was fine with that. It's just like, I feel like it's the same panel every year, where it's just like, okay, we're all the podcasters up there, you know, they bring in new blood here and there, and it's just sort of like the same stuff. So if we could figure out something for New York this year, I don't know if it's too late to submit. It might be, but I don't know. Maybe not. It's only April. To submit for a panel, come up with something really fun and interesting to do, I think it'd be cool. Instead of just having a bunch of podcasts that they're going, yeah, we all do the show, and this is what our show's about. And you know, on occasion you get people like, oh, well, how do you get podcasts? What do you do? And, you know, and that's what it's good for. But I think it needs a new angle, you know, something sort of
creative.
Make it a little more creative and fun, you know, for not, you know, just us, but the, you know, the audience as well. So let's put our heads together. Maybe we can figure out something for New York Comic Con.
That sounds like a plan. Because I will also be at Special Edition. I don't really have any plans for what I'm doing there, except walking around and having a good time, you know, going to panels.
Well, they actually just contacted me recently about something, so I may have something going on there. We're not sure yet, so.
Okay, good, because I know that their panels, like their submissions just closed. I was trying to get something together, but it just, like, wasn't enough time. Yeah. And I will be in Brooklyn, though, for the first FlameCon. It was Kickstarter supported, and it's the first LGBT Comic-Con that, you know, was on the books anyway for the New York City area, even though it's in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I know that there's another one now. There's a couple
small Brooklyn ones. Yeah, Brooklyn Comics Graphic Festival or something like that. And
there's that one.
Yeah.
But, I mean, another, like, gay-specific friendly con, I think, in a different part of the city. But, so FlameCon funded through Kickstarter.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's going to be in June in Brooklyn.
Right on. Excellent.
Yeah.
Some more cons, hey, why not?
Cons, you can wear. They have a mascot, you know, a flame guy with like.
I think they missed a trick. They should make Flame Princess from Adventure Time their mascot.
Yeah, I don't know. He's like this pretty wild outfit, and they got a guy to wear the costume and everything.
Awesome, that's cool. Very cool.
Well, I will let you go. You can give me the royal shake away wave.
Yes. Goodbye. It's so great talking to you. Oh, now, just need to run off now, so thanks. No, thank you very much. I really appreciate coming on. It's been years in the making we've talked about this. And if I ever figure out Skype to record on my side, or if I can drag you into the city one day, I'd have to have you come co-host with me one time.
So at one of these shows, we will, you know, you'll get to, you know, have to deal with my presence.
Oh, no. It'll be nothing but a pleasure, my dear.
Gotcha. See you soon.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.